In a world with entirely too many shows about cars, this is another pointless automotive podcast.
Hello! Or something like that. Hi, Chadwick.
Frank, what's up, man?
I'm good. We've got someone lurking among us. They wrote on a chalkboard if you're watching along at home. Himself. Artemis. Is it art? Is it just art? Is it beyond art? I know you was
art. Aardvark. I mean, I'm down for whatever.
Mr. Vark, Art Cervantes. How are you?
I did work at a company. Hi, my name is Art Cervantes. I did work at a company where the CEO called me Artemis, and that stuck within the organization. That was, although there is one friend of ours that we know collectively that does call me Artemis in text threads. But I'm not in person. But yeah, my full name, if you guys want to know it, is Juan Arturo Cervantes Chacon. And when I was in kindergarten, no one could say my name Arturo, so I started going by Art. And you're going to ask me, but wait a minute, you said that your name was Juan Arturo, and why are you going by your middle name? So in a lot of Latin cultures, and you know, this is also, you know, the Romance languages. So you're French, you're Italians, you have people who are like Jean-François, Jean-Luc,
you know, Picard, famously. Yeah.
Of course.
You know, and there's also Giancarlo, Gian Alfredo in Italian. So and a lot of these folks end up going by their middle name, like myself. So that first one there, my first name rather, is
Juan number
more
one.
For flow. It's more for flow than, sure. than for as my actual real name. So that's some background on my name. Yeah. So now I guess we can wrap this up.
Where to go from here? Oh boy.
One off the list. Done.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I've maybe called you Artemis Prime before. I think that's
I'll respond.
Out. And so for the uninitiated, first off, I feel like probably there's a significant crossover between people that listen to part of what you do, which is the DWA, that's Driving While Awesome podcast, and various driving adventures and such. So people might know you from that. You might also know Artemis Prime, as we're suddenly calling him, from the world of Radwood. If you're familiar with the Radwood shows, which of course you are, Rad Cervantes here is one of the chief proprietors of Radwood Properties, and he's working on that and with that to this very day. He's a retired Lemons racer. Perhaps. What else do you have under your belt?
Perhaps. I'm one of the co-founders of Radwood. It is very public knowledge that we sold the company to Hagerty a couple of years ago, and I stayed on board as the director. And Warren, who's also one of the co-founders and still part of the Drive Wallace podcast, stuck around as well as the head of operations for Radwood. The rest of the crew sort of dispersed, and Lane still contributes, to a certain extent. But I guess where to start? I don't know. I mean, in terms of background, I've been into cars pretty much my whole life. Early on as a kid, I will admit that I was much more into airplanes, but I was still a car person. But my dad was a pilot, so I grew up going to air shows. You know, I spent a lot of time at airplane hangars as a kid. And then also there's a lot of crossover between airplane people and car people. And one of the things that you get exposed to very early on is that people that have hangars where they store their planes usually make use of that extra space and stuff cars in there. So, I've always been around both and machines of all types. I grew up, my dad had a body shop growing up and a detail business. So, spent a lot of time, around dust and Bondo and filler and also some good stuff that's healthy for you as a child, especially your respiratory system.
Explains a lot,
Yeah, exactly. So, and then from there, I, being a car geek pretty much as in my whole life, I have to say that, my first car, which is my, my unofficial first car, I call it, which is like the big joke, is that I was given, a Buick Regal, a 1983 Buick Regal. And I consider that my car's I consider that a car zero for me. It's not what I call my car, because at the same time, when I was 16, I had my sights set on getting a BMW 2002, because that's what I really wanted as my first.
Which is very similar to a Buick Regal, famously.
They're pretty much the same thing. Yeah, you know, front engine, rear wheel drive. They have wheels. They could seat four people.
Mostly made of metal.
Mostly made of metal, except that my Buick Regal had velour interior. And my 71 2002 had a vinyl interior. But basically, you know, while I was on the hunt for that, I was scrounging up my dough with the intention of buying that as my first car. Given said car, drove the Regal. I had it for about 3 months before I bought the 71 2002, which is kind of the car that kicked off my personal enthusiasm for vehicles and wrenching and tuning and all that. And so very quickly, I kind of started getting into like the canyon carving stuff. You know, I grew up in Northern California, and so I was up around a lot of twisty mountain roads. And you know, on that car, I did quite a bit of stuff. You know, I can't remember what LSD I put in it, but I put an LSD in it. I upgraded the brakes. I upgraded the suspension.
E21 stuff.
E21 stuff. I had E21 Recaros in it. I put a 38 downdraft on it. And I can't remember what else. It was a long ass time ago. But anyways, I ended up like rocking that car for a while. That, again, abridged version, we had a little pre-podcast convo. That led to a bunch of other BMW 2002s, and that immediately led into autocrossing. So I got really into autocrossing like early college, and continued to do so for many years. So autocross for a long time, and did so in a lot of the different cars that I had. So and at some point in college, I switched over. I mean, I went back and forth, and especially later in college, I started flipping cars as like supplemental income. But it's sometimes successful. No, for the most part, it was pretty good. But I mean, I had a lot of different cars that I wrenched on. Usually I had a couple, you know, two or three at a time, and whenever I could. And it was a lot of CRXs, a lot of Integras, a lot of Miatas, a lot of Hondas. And, you know, I had GSRs, and I had all sorts of all manner of Civics, you know, EFs, EGs, and EKs, and mostly set up for canyon carving and autocross duty. Like I was never really a high power drag guy. That wasn't really my thing. Sure. And then once they started getting stolen like crazy, and then my EG got stolen.
Oh, no.
I was like, all right, I'm kind of over this. You know, I don't want to, it's just a shitty scene. So, what did I buy right after that? I can't remember. I started getting it. Oh, I bought an E30. And so I think that was my first E30. I got a 318 IS, which if you're familiar, that's the 91 only.
91 only.
Yep. One year. Yep.
Yeah. M42 powered car with an LSD, a 410 LSD. And that was a fun car. And that was like a really interesting introduction into sort of like balance and front end feel, and you know how much of a difference it makes to have that engine sit so far back and have that revier motor and kind of like that dynamic. And especially because I had driven my friends 325 ISs and 325s, and so driving that, like, you know, I noticed, okay, it's technically slower from 0 to 60, but it's that epitome of slow car fast, right? It's like, I don't know, 140-ish horsepower or whatever, but it's all
on a good day.
The very top. You know, you're all at 7,000 RPM.
Full bow float.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then from there, I had a ton of E30s. You know, once I got a real job and a real career, I started to afford, I was able to afford some cooler stuff, and then got into E30 M3. I had a 993. I had several E36 M3s, everything from like E36s. I had one that was DSP prepped, like full race car. And that was actually a 325 IS. Had all sorts of E36 M3s, everything from, you know, coupes to sedans and all that jazz, M345s. And, then things sort of escalated. You know, I got the opportunity to really kind of build the ultimate BMW 2002. And at that point, you know,
driving machine, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was one of those situations where, you know, when I was younger, I did everything I could afford. And at the time, you know, it was just, you know, literally paycheck to paycheck. And then at this point, you know, we're talking about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or so, you know, where, and not even that, maybe a little more recent. But I had the 2002 and I've skipped a ton of cars. You know, I had a lot of different cars. I had, I think I, the other day, actually about a couple of weeks ago, I tallied it up. I had 12 Miatas, I think 12 NA Miatas. and yeah, all different kinds. I had, you know, M editions, I had a C option package. I had like super stripper models. I had, you know, all of them, you know, yes. I had 1.6s and 1.8s. And for the most part, all of them were super nice. And you know, that was especially when I was like going through that process of like seeking out like clean examples like that I knew I could tinker with a little bit and then flip ultimately. And that was pretty fruitful. What I think actually real quick in the Miatas, the coolest one I had that was a pretty, pretty good autocross car. And I actually got like top time of day multiple times with that car was... I will brag. It was a 91. So originally a 1.6, but it had a 2000 block from an NB and a 2001 head. So, you know, you get BBTI and, actually it was a 99 block, I think, in a 2001 head anyways, but good setup. And the thing is with a car like that, you're immediately outclassed. So the class was irrelevant. It was just all for, that was all time, you know, all
for
like,
fun.
And it was one of those situations where I used to autocross with like every organization just because I wanted seat time. So I did like BMW CCA, I did, you know, American Autocross Series, I did Golden Gate Lotus Club, you know, you name it. I was there, UFO, I did all of it. And UFO is the Datsun one in the Bay Area. And so, and the idea there is, you know, I just wanted to ultimately like own my skills and like, you know, and improve, but at this, I always like, putting like my crosshairs were always on like the fastest car and or the driver to beat of the day. Right. And so, and that particular car was like really well sorted. I had, I mean, pretty much everything that could be done to it, like suspension wise and that engine setup. And one thing that's really cool about Miatas, and everybody knows this, it's the epitome of slow car fast, right? Is that all that power is totally usable. And so you're always on it and it's very, you can extract all that power. And in a tight autocross course, that means that you can go very fast, where if you're in a Corvette or something, you know, you're it's way more throttle sensitive, right? So it's easier to blow it. So it's kind of cheating, but anyways.
What do you have now? Like what's in the stable today?
I was going to mention the 2002 real quick. So, cause it's an important lesson that is basically, ultimately made me make certain decisions in life, namely that I will never do carburetors again. So it was an opportunity again to get basically do like whatever I wanted and build like the ultimate 2002, however I wanted to build it. Right. I thought, okay, I'm going to create sort of like a period hop, right? Like it was a 75 mint green car. I put Euro bumpers on it, you know, do the whole thing. And like, I'm actually a weirdo. I like Euro bumper square tail cars more than round tail.
How dare you, sir?
I'm a sick man. And this is sort of, so I'm like, all right, I'm going to use this platform as a really clean car, no rust. And, you know, it had a lot of work done to it. And namely the engine was high compression, you know, cam in there, exhaust, you know, suspension, blah, blah, blah. But, when I got it, it had a single side draft. And it was weird. Okay. It was like this
trippy
manifold. No, it was a side draft. It was like this trippy manifold on just a single side draft carburetor and on a Weber. And I mean, it was super compromised. And I knew like, you know, hey, this is a really hot motor. Like there's a lot more like potential here. And so I wanted to go dual side draft and do like, you know, nice little trumpets on it and everything. And it took me probably 6 months to find someone to actually work on it. And believe it or not, the only person after talking to a lot of people in the Bay Area and, you know, like a lot of these guys,
or something.
And Steve Dinan himself.
Okay.
So Steve Dinan was the only person who was willing to wrench on this. And everyone else was just kind of like, you know what, we don't have brass and then you need a dyno to do it right. And it's just not something we're interested in. And so that was like lesson number one, like, holy shit, like carburetors are going extinct, especially from a performance standpoint. Like unless you go to a race shop at Sonoma somewhere, maybe, you know, you can find something, but I was also going to be doing some other stuff while I was there. And so he did some work there and it came out awesome. Like it was actually fantastic. If you were between 4,000 and 7,000, maybe no, 4,500 and 7,000 RPM.
Sure.
Again, high lift cam, big dual 45s on there. And this is a, you know, a 2 liter. And it was just brutal. Like driving around town, it was just so smelly, just dumping gas. And it was, I gave me a migraine every time I drove it. And, but if I'm up in the mountains or if I'm hauling ass,
yeah,
again, between 4,500 and 7,000, absolutely perfect. Airfield ratios are spot on. Like it drove beautifully. But that was, again, a big learning experience for me. It's like, yeah, you know, carburetors are compromised, but until you actually go through the motions and then you realize, okay, you have to tune for here, here, here in the power band, and that's all. Like, you know, you can't, you know, it's not fuel injection, right? and so anyways, that was a great car. Ended up on Petrolicious. It was cool. It was an awesome build, but ultimately moved it on to a buddy of ours, Ryan Turry, who's the COO of Velocity Invitational.
Oh, cool.
Anyways, yeah, from there I've had 993, NSX, a pretty built Celica All-Track, which is a bucket list for me.
Wow.
What did I have? A Z3M coupe. I'm trying to go. Oh yeah. One of my favorite cars I've ever had. And I've bought and sold multiple times back and forth to, Paul Mitchell, is that Eurospec 500 SEC.
Yeah.
That you guys have probably seen around. So that was, that car has a funny story that is a whole podcast on its own. What else have I had? I'm trying to think more recently. I have an R33 GTR now that is actually for sale. So buy it.
Man, I've found myself very recently around an innumerous number of R33 GTRs. Just in the past month, I've done photo shoots on three of them.
No way.
Midnight Purple V-Spec, a white 200,000 kilometer V-Spec that's mechanically perfect.
Nice.
And then a recent gray pearl, GTR, not V-Spec, but real nice car. So I've become very familiar with those cars.
Very cool. Yeah. They're a lot of fun, and a lot of the cars, really, I mean, like most people do, right? Like these are bucket list cars for me, right?
Sure.
I literally have a list on my phone, I'm checking these off, right? It's like, hey, like I got to do this, and this, you know.
I don't know why, but I'm picturing you holding your phone up, and then you've got like a nail, and you're like scratching it off the list, like across your screen. That's just the only way to do it.
I just have to. I take it. I frequent the mall often because I have to swap my screen. Doesn't? I have to replace the screen every 10 cars or 20 cars.
Yeah, the stop by Claire's and like Sanrio Surprise, and
maybe get some earrings. You know,
get whatever. A pretzel. You know, yeah.
Sure, maybe even a Cinnabon. Obviously big car dude. I've had over 80 cars. I need to retally it.
Rookie numbers.
It's been a while. Yeah, so Rick, pretty basic bitch.
You said it, not me.
One thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. Cap it off. Cap off the list because I wanted to dovetail that into.
Let's cap it off. And so you mentioned the rallies, you know. So I'm building a car specifically for rally use. So it's sort of kind of like my magnum opus, if you will, of like JDM and Euro. And I really like E30s. I've had a lot of them. I've driven everything from, you know, a piece of shit 318i to a Euro spec Sport Evo and everything in between. And so I'm building an E30 off it's a 325IS, it's a 87 Alpine white black interior, K24 build, and it's a mild build in terms of the actual engine. It's just cams and breathing mods and a tune. It's running off of Hondata. And our boys over at Beeline are putting it together for me. I'm doing ground control suspension on it, upgraded brakes, and you know, all the stuff. But ultimately, though, the goal is to have like a nice, well-balanced Canyon carburetor, you know, this setup is going to be about 245 wheel, 8,000 RPM.
Plenty.
And yeah,
that's
and
killer.
About 200 wheel torque. The cool thing about that is the early cars, especially like mine, the first year 87s weigh about 2650 wet. So I'm like targeting a 2,500 pound weight. And you know, power to weight's pretty solid there. So again, I'm not drag racing. Everyone always asks if I'm keeping it NA. Yes, I am, because I'm not drifting, you know. So those cars already have like pretty limited traction as it is with that semi-trailing rear suspension. So that's plenty good.
Well, cool. Cause like, you know, what I know we kind of wanted to talk about on the whole, you know, me, yourself, Chadwick, is we're men of certain age nowadays. True. I'm not going to ask you your exact age. Do we give a shit? Like, how old are you? I'm going to ask you. Fuck it.
40.
40. Me too. Yep. Chadwick is 40 plus a couple.
43.
And,
yeah.
43. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. And so, you know, dovetailing off of all those details you just gave us about, you know, your first car, your beloved Regal, car from car zero to a car about to be 81 and a half or whatever we got going, is, you know, something that Chadwick and I have talked about is we's getting old. And I mean that in a good way, where, you know, when we started down this road of our car fandom, there's a lot, shit has changed, right? Like, when I got into doing car stuff, my first car is a 1965 Plymouth Barracuda, and which is very different to what I'm generally playing around with today. And there's an innumerous number of things in my youth, my misguided youth, that I thought was like really cool. Like, I got my Barracuda, I was like, I'm going to rake this thing. I'm going to put like 2-inch lift blocks in the back and have this thing just sneaker shaped rake going down the street. And now, from beyond insufferable, like I couldn't imagine doing that to a car today. And so it makes an excellent dovetail between, you know, you started with a 2002 and then you had a bunch of, you know, Japanese stuff, not JDM necessarily, but like a bunch of Honda stuff. And then you went back Euro again, and then you just capped it off with a little bit of both, right? Like it's a European car with a built Honda engine, and kind of having your cake and eat it too. Is there anything, like, I don't know, maybe let's start with this. Like, we'll go around the horn. Like, what's something like that, you know, I just mentioned raked muscle cars, which today it sounds terrible in my mind. Is there something that you can just think of off the top of your head from way back yonder? Something that was something you were really into, whether it was a one specific thing or more of like an overarching thing, and that you're not nearly as into or straight up you find cringy today?
Chadwick?
Go for it, dude.
Boy. You know, I don't know. I think back in the day, and I kind of played with a lot of different stuff too. It's just back in the day, it was like the sound, right? Like, and we thought it was cool to have the loudest car. And right now, boy, I appreciate a great sounding car. But back in the day, it was like, sure, this WRX straight pipe sounds awesome. You know, you can't beat it. And now I can't even imagine running a car like that as somewhat responsible, you know, adult. Right. Like, so I think it was just to be the loudest and not necessarily the fastest or the nicest, but just making sound for the sake of making sound. It's just that I couldn't even imagine it now. Now I would like these over exaggerated burble tunes on pieces of shit cruising around. It's like, come on, man. You know, that for me is it, man.
Have either of you guys ever made any like truly regrettable like exhaust mods to any of your guys' cars?
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely deleted mufflers. I've deleted resonators in cars that ended up being super droney, but then I justify it, you know, to myself. It's like, nah, dude, but it's only between, you know, 2,500 and 2,700, and then I'm fine around that. Sure. But
it's only between 55 and 75 miles an hour.
Exactly. Fine. So my 993, it was a 97 C2, which is exactly what I wanted. Killer. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, it took me a few years to find that car. I wanted a very specific color, and I wanted ocean blue metallic with a gray interior, and almost all of them have a tan interior. Mm-hmm. And I just love that sort of like battleship gray with that ocean blue, you know, it's just such a great combo. Mm-hmm. And I wanted LSD and nothing else. And of course a manual. And cause I wanted bare bones, cause those cars came with like stupid audio systems, and like, you know, they were kind of laden with a bunch of shit. So I wanted like the simplest, like most, like, you know, basic version of that car.
Driver's car edition.
Yeah. And that was awesome. I ended up finding it up in Oregon. But anyways, I bought it completely stock. Like, it was owned by a doctor, by a surgeon in, I think it was in Seattle.
And, proctologist?
A proctologist. And so he traded it in on a new, at the time, whatever the new turbo was, you know, sure. This is about 7 years ago. Yeah. Oh,
okay. So 991.
Yeah, 991. And so he traded it in on that. And what owner car? You know, I picked it up from there, drove it straight home. It was an awesome road trip. And it was completely stock. And then I did like RS suspension, like Eurospec ride height. I put Recaro pole positions in it with like Alcantara inserts that match the interior. It was black leather because there are, you know, it's a black dash car and all that. And then, you know, wheels, tires, whatever. But the big one though, it was
tornado air intake.
Oh, the little insert.
Yeah. You put that, I'm assuming that, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
You really should tune for that kind of power though.
That's true.
I mean, it was a Vario Ram car. And you get a little bit of that crossover with those cars. So I did. There's something called the motor sound package on 993s. And so that, if you look at the airbox, there's basically like a template, if you will, or like a provision for where it would be cut out.
Yeah.
And so in on the motor sound package, it was a hole, and then it had like the little Venturi, like a
horn thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I replicated that. I like actually made it myself.
With like a Pringles can that you just like cut the bottom out of and like hot glued it to the.
Not quite, but it sounded killer. But that wasn't the mod that I made that was crazy. It was, I put a Super Cup exhaust system, which is literally a race exhaust, and it's not, it's kind of muffled. If you look at it, it's basically straight pipes. You delete the mufflers, and it has a little bit of a resonating kind of wall, but it was extremely loud. It sounded awesome. And I don't know if you guys splice in other video and audio, but there's a video that Lane took of me doing donuts in the middle of nowhere, not Mexico. It was just in the middle of nowhere.
It was on a close course professional driver. Yeah, of course.
And you get, you get to hear what it sounded like, but, it sounded really, really aggressive. It sounded almost like a V8 kind of in some ways, but, but you know, that big flat six, you know, and, it was one of those things that I would not do now. But I definitely thoroughly enjoyed it. It was extremely loud and I just tolerated it. Like it sometimes it was painful, like when you're on the freeway for a long time, but it just sounded so awesome that, you know, now in small doses, I would do it. But here's part of being an old man and a respectful old man. I wouldn't do it just for the sake of my neighbors straight up. Like and I live on a hill at the top of a hill. So just coming up the hill, everybody would be so pissed. You know? So I don't want to be that guy. That's one.
Yeah, no, that's funny. Like, and I'm very much the same way. It's just like, I'm almost to the point now where I don't anticipate myself really doing exhaust unless I'm doing something like your E30 build that you were talking about where like everything is custom. If I bought something that was stock today, I don't know if I'm doing exhaust mods on it. I really don't, just in general. And I don't know if that's like, if I'm going full, like old man yells at cloud, but like, I don't know.
Frank, I think it really is like the car, right? Like a 911 can be a little rowdy. Like it's a sporty car. My NSX, I had a 93. I ran a Pride VFL with a test pipe. And it literally was the loudest but sexiest noise ever. And it made sense because the NSX is a loud looking car. Like it just belonged. Plus, those things were so neutered sounding from the factory. It was just.
Yeah, you couldn't hear it at all.
Nothing. Yeah. But like for that, you get away with it. Now, if you're a G35 with like a burble tune and you're burning your exhaust off with a flamethrower, that's a different story. I think the car can sometimes justify that kind of noise, but just making cars loud, right? It's a tough choice. I think it's going to be the right personality for the car.
Make cars loud again. Yeah. Like I definitely think there's something to that. You know what? Something I see that like I would have considered in my youth and I see people with this now and I audibly roll my eyes is you ever see cars rolling around with a tinted windshield?
Yes. I saw one today.
Wild. It's like insulting to my, being 40, like I get offended by it. When I was like 16, I would be like, "Oh, that's kind of cool. Like, it keeps it cool." And like, blah, blah, blah. And now it's just like, it
makes you live in Arizona or something.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm in the Bay Area. Like, there's like, it gets triple digits like 2 days a year. So like,
yeah,
no.
But dude, at nighttime, that's gotta be like, it's just pitch black, right?
Yeah,
that's brutal.
It feels like so irresponsible as like an human being.
You're gonna run into the guy that nightshaded his brake lights, right?
And then somehow there's a Vanta black car in there in the mix. I don't know.
It's ridiculous.
But you know, dude, I actually, controversial. I don't know about you guys, but I actually don't like tint. Period. Like
I'm right there.
Not a fan.
I'm a fishbowl guy. Yeah. Like, and that is one of those things that, I used to be more willing to remove tint, but if it's nasty, I'm over it. Like, it's just such a pain in the ass. I don't have the
time. Especially beer glass, you're like kind of trying to, like, you know, like scrape the defroster off and
heat gun, baby, but it still sucks.
Yeah. Well, I actually steamer is the best that I found. So I have like a steam wand that I use, and I bought it specifically for that purpose. I still have it in the garage, and because it just softens the glue so much more, like in a way that, and with the, what the moisture that it, you know, like I found like heat guns get like really sticky, you know, like everything gets really sticky.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't have as much success personally when I started, when I first tried it. So then I just stuck to the steamer. And yeah, I mean, I've had some brutal ones, like, you know, where you have to, especially when you're dealing with the freaking defroster, you know, and like, you're just like, it's just a mess. So I'm a fishbowl guy. I if it's stock tint, fine. But like, sure, you know, if the glass is actually tinted, but like, I would not apply tint to a car. It's not my thing.
No. Yeah. I'm the same way. It's funny. For a long time, I was like, I just won't tint like the front windows or the windshield. And now in my head, I'm like, I don't want any of it. Like, but like, I get if I see someone driving with a tinted windshield, I get offended. Like, it's that bad. Like,
do you just like, do you just assault them immediately? So you're just like, you just jump in front.
Yeah. I'm wanted for like 11 counts of assault and murder. It's
sexual assault, of course.
Oh
yeah. Nice. No, I just, yeah, that, yeah. I'm me and Diddy.
How does that escalation happen, by the way? Hey, step out of your vehicle. I don't like your tinted windshield.
I don't like your tint, and then I'm sexually assaulted.
I don't like your tint or your. I don't like your tint or your pants.
But I like your mouth. Yeah, no, yeah. It's yeah. Suddenly now I'm the monster. We've come full circle.
You are a monster. I was just gonna say I have another. I mean, in terms of car stuff.
Yes, please.
This is controversial.
Takes today. It's good.
You did throw this out there as a little bit of a primer for me, you know, like, all right, what's going on? What the topic of discussion was today. And I thought of something that is controversial because I know Chadwick has one, but I don't know if you have a front wheel drive car. I have zero interest in owning a performance oriented front wheel drive car. And I had
all that Honda history and you kick it all to the curb.
I drove a lot of them and like, you know, the thing is that, okay. Like I've even recently I've considered it as a daily driver, like sure, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, if I get like
an appliance,
you know, yeah. Like a golf all track wagon as like my dog car or, you know, or not all track, I guess a sport wagon, sure. Like, you know, mm-hmm. Or even like a Golf GTI or whatever. They're great cars. They drive well for what they are and all that. But I'm just like, it sucks. I'm like mentally screwed up. I just can't get over it. I'm so like, I feel like I just, you know, I'm sorry. So, but I still have an unchecked box though. So there's an exception. Ooh, here.
Should we guess? Should we guess?
I already got it.
He knows it.
I feel like it's ITR. But I feel like it's not. I'm just gonna go with one that I've owned, and I know Chadwick has owned, but I believe mine was a dog shit quality version. I'm gonna say a B13 SER Sentra.
Ooh, interesting.
That's a good one. Is this
clean
a
one? A clean, nice one.
Is this a car that's sold in the US or not?
Yes.
Oh, okay, that changes things. Where I was thinking hot hatch. I was thinking hot hatch in general.
Corrado SLC.
I've had a Corrado SLC. I've had a Mark One. I've had a really, really clean Mark One GTI as well as a Mark Two 16 valve. Super nice car. That at the time, I'll show you guys pictures. It was absolutely impeccable. And I think I sold it for $4,500, maybe about 12 years ago. Maybe 15 years ago. Yeah, 15 years ago. I sold it for $4,500. And easily that car is now worth like 35 or 40 or something. Yeah. You
know, it's like, don't play that game. We don't play that game.
I know, right? Yeah, we're all in that.
right.
But yeah, what you got, Chadwick?
I don't know. Now I'm kind of misled here. So it's front wheel drive. I don't know if it's something more modern, like maybe something like a Fiesta ST or something along that vein.
I got a thought. Wait, no, you said it was sold in North America. Never mind. Mm-hmm. Never mind. Never mind.
Well, no Peugeots. I have to stay. I have driven a 205 16. They're cool. Super they're cool. Yeah. Mr. Harrington the Fourth nailed it. but I think it's because he's an I think he's an avid listener of Driving While Awesome, so he knows that I've talked about it.
Should I sell myself out and say that I'm not an avid listener? And I'm
bastard.
I know. I'm selling myself despite the sweatshirt I wore for today's event.
Offensive. He's wearing a Driving While Awesome sweatshirt.
I do listen quite often. So thanks, Art.
I missed it.
But B13, we both own B13 SERs. And I saw a really clean one in the city yesterday, and it blew me away. We've got the quiz ad game to play later on in the pod, and I almost picked a B13 SER.
Damn, I would love to.
It was too obvious.
I want to hear it. You should just read it regardless. I'm curious to see how they marketed it in period, because it was a racy little car, you know, LSD.
They call it a sedan. The whole ad, it a sedan, which,
wow. Well, it's because they call the 510 a sedan, right? So that's sort of its predecessor.
It's because it's basically, if there's a pillar, there was a time where three box with a B pillar, it was a sedan. If it was not a B pillar, it was a coupe. I don't know.
Most of the Sentras were sedans, the B13. So that might be.
Yeah. Well, I think it has to do with the back. It's actually the C pillar in the roof line, right? So it's most cars have a B pillar. So it's that. It's that box on that third box, if you will, that really ultimately determines
and then
that.
I think super technically, like the textbook definition is like the distance between like the seat bottom and the rear axle, like center line. It's super obscure and like no one gives a shit. And that's why.
Why don't you know the formula, dude? What the fuck? What kind of
This? Stoichiometric, but for coupes. I don't know. It's complex.
Grand Coupe has something to argue with that definition.
The CLS. I think those are great. Great guesses. I mean, the B13 SERs are super cool. I almost bought one, and so when I was in college, I test drove one. And Hushy Pushy Matt, who's a friend of ours, he went with me, and he'll remember this car. It was a white one, really nice car, and it had a UKDM SR20DE. So it was a higher compression motor, and it drove great and everything, but we just could not get down to a price that I was happy with. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that it was super annoying to me because I was, you know, a broke college kid, and the dude was a heart surgeon at Stanford, and he had owned the car, and he had owned the car since new, and he swapped that motor into it when he blew the head gasket on the other car and warped the head. On the original motor. Yep. And so he found a UKDM motor on eBay and put that in there. And so, and I was just like, dude, like you could make up the difference that let's say we're 700 bucks.
You were three hours of overtime.
Exactly.
I know what I got, bro.
And so it was unfortunate. Yeah. So I didn't get that car, but that was as close as I got. I really like them. I think they're still pretty undervalued and kind of underappreciated. Although there's some outliers out there.
Can't find
them. A clean stock one doesn't exist. No.
Yeah, they're rare.
There's like four.
Yeah, I like the Mexico DM stuff, you know, with the cool headlights.
Yeah,
Suru. Yeah. But yeah, you nailed it. ITR. Yeah. So the ITR, because I had a DC2 GSR and I also had a DB2. The DC2 GSR is such a great car. And I did all of the ITR stuff to it, but I couldn't afford an ITR, you know, and it had like basically the subframe reinforcement with the bigger sway bar and like all suspension. And as you know, the ITR is like seam welded from the factory and it's got way more material in the rear. Like, it's just like, it's a different car, you know? It's still an unchecked box. I have a feeling that I'll probably like it and drive it for a while and then sell it as usual. But like, it's not a car that I would necessarily want to keep in my fleet forever. But about maybe 5 years ago now, I was seriously considering getting one. I'm like, all right, I should do it now because they were starting to blow up.
Yeah.
And one of my really good friends who I haven't really kept in touch with him outside of social media now, but he has a shop in San Francisco and we used to do, you know, Honda shit together back in the day. And I reached out to him like, hey dude, I'm really seriously considering getting an ITR. Are they still getting stolen left and right? And he said, yes. And I'm like, shit, I'm out. I don't want to deal with it. Like, I'm a fucking grown ass man. You know, I don't want to drive. Like, I have kids, I don't want some clowns fucking following me home, breaking into my garage. Like I don't want to deal with that shit. Yeah. So I just decided against it. You know, it's one of those cars apparently still to this day. It's you know, as Jay Leno calls it, it's an A to A car, right? It's like you just you drive it and then you just come back and park it. You know, like it's a bummer.
And that's the thing. It's just like, I know we talked about, Chadwick and I talked about a little bit last episode. It was just like being, having cars that are truly usable, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can go out and take it for a day or two or three or four or whatever, and just use it without, I mean, that's kind of an extreme case of like worried about it getting jacked, but more like we were talking about, like you don't worry about like it gets a rock chip or you add some miles on the odometer. Like those are things that like it's a good luxury to not have to worry about. Why don't we do this before we jump on to quizzing all over each other? Is what about, like, I know, like 16-year-old me with 40-year-old me's.
Thank God you said budget. Me. You start, I know 16-year-old.
I know 16-year-olds like, in general. Well, I'm not allowed to say that. I'm not allowed to say that because I live directly next to a high school. Like right here is a high school. So yeah, I don't want to get evicted from my own house. Megan's Law is a thing.
How many tinted front windshields? Tinted front windshields? Because you can be
I would actually stack them.
They're all pedophiles. That's what it means.
Exactly. Yes. Speaking of Jared Fogel, what would 16 with? Okay, you're 16. You have
16
your,
inches.
You have your today's no.
Dirk Diggler. You're Dirk Diggler.
You are Dirk Diggler in 1979. No. You have
Sudcock.
You have 40-year-old Art's budget, but you are 16-year-old Art.
Interesting.
What are you shopping for? In a car, in a motor vehicle.
Well, at the time, this would make sense just based on where my mind was. BMW 2002 Turbo.
Mm. Ooh, like in period like factory
the,
proper.
Like the real the one. Turbo. Yeah, yeah. And at the time, you know, like I could absolutely afford one. Not anymore. Now they're, you know, whatever, sure. Deep into the six figures. And at the time, just knowing myself, again, I'm putting myself in that mindset, you know, mm-hmm. like what I wanted. And again, I was obsessed with 2002s, and that was like the pinnacle for me. You know, outside of that, it was going to be like roof stuff or 993 Turbo S, which I couldn't afford mm-hmm. probably. So,
right. But that was what the want would have been.
That would have been it. Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to think. I'm like scanning. Yeah, because
how much of that want then is different than the want now? Like, I feel like those are things that you would desperately want today. But was there anything from back then you were like, ooh, I really want this, and maybe you want nothing to do with that now? Or is it everything tracks? Like everything that you wanted now is what you want now. Because that's part of it. Part of it too, right? Like,
yeah.
But people in their 30s and 40s now are coming into money, and now they're all buying stuff that they wanted when they were in high school. But is there any of that you wanted then that you don't want now? Or does that rule reign true?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's funny is that, no, it is definitely aligned, because I there's definitely a lot of that. But there's also, but you know, ITR, I wanted in high school. Right. I wanted, you know, I was super into JDM stuff too. So I used to go when I would go to San Francisco, I would go to Kinokuniya bookstore and get like the Japanese magazines and see all the D option shit and all the, or whatever it was, you know, back in the day. But here's one that is controversial again, maybe.
Ooh,
huh?
Hot take.
No, it's a car that I definitely wanted in high school, and obviously are extremely popular now and very valuable, but
Mark IV.
I don't really care to own one, and it's a Mark IV Supra.
You and I are 40, and Chadwick is 40 plus a handful. That was my exact poster. And then I think I was like a sophomore in high school. I graduated in 2002, and I believe I was a sophomore in high school. And figuring out how, like, if I worked really hard and I saved up some money and I took out a loan from my parents and did all the things, that I could have bought a then like high mile manual Supra Turbo And at the time, this would have been just before Fast and Furious came out. That's like the line of demarcation of when the values started getting crazy on those, and they haven't stopped. I can get one for like 15K. And high mile then was like 80,000 miles.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And being like, boy, that's a lot of money, but I think if I do this and that, and like, and I sell a kidney, and like, I can do this, and I can maybe find a really good deal on one and talk them down. They're asking 15. I can talk them down to 13.5.
Yeah.
And that was almost possible. And then Fast and Furious came out, and then the, that 15K turned into 30. And now it's 130 for like a high mile driver. Yep. So it, yeah.
I don't
know. How about Chadwick? How about you, man? You got anything in your stuck in your craw that 16 year old you? Whether there's a big change in opinion or not, you've already got the poster shot down at the Mark IV.
Yeah, right. No, I grew up around. I grew up kind of in the boonies, so muscle cars were the thing growing up. I've always wanted to get my hand on something really good. Like a really good Nova or even something weirder. I kind of like the weird stuff, like a Duster. I'd love to do a Duster over and like
just an old Omega.
Cool. Yeah. No something, I think I'd be down with that, but just, I've always had that in the back of my head. I always thought muscle cars were super cool. And then, you know, obviously when we got into more, you know, at the timeline you guys were talking about, the Mark IV Supers were like 15K. I was in the military. We had totally 100% expendable income, right? So a lot of my friends bought that shit. I would have personally died if I owned a Mark IV Super at age 18 or 19, just to be completely clear, the way I drive. So I saw a lot of that stuff come and go, and that's really what I got into the Japanese stuff, and muscle cars kind of went to the back burner. And now, like, muscle cars are weird. They're in a weird space right now because you can... The want isn't out there, right? They're not fetching like 80 grand for like a kind of done over like Chevelle. You can actually find a decent one for like 40 or build your own, which I'd probably do. I kind of want to go back. I want to revisit that and do a muscle car. Plus this 80s and 90s shit I work on is like the hybrid of the worst technologies, right? I'm dealing with vacuum shit, basic sensors. And like, I want to go back to muscle cars where it's just goddamn simple, you know,
give me back to Art's nightmare of carburetors.
Yeah. I'll take a carburetor. You know,
no, it's funny that you mentioned that because I, you know, I was definitely way more into muscle cars back then.
Same here.
Even though I didn't necessarily want to own one, but my dad he was an influence, and you know, and he had like a Hemi Cuda back in the day, and like, but he was also super into Datsuns. And like to this day, I still lust after like a 69 Z28, like Trans Am style build. Like you know, that would be like if I was loaded enough, like, and if I was going to have a 6-car garage, I would absolutely have that in there. And I would do like, you know, the mini lights with like the Avons and like, you know, just like a badass, like road course racer. Like, I think that, like, yeah, I mean, they're so cool. I think they're rad, but I mean, I would definitely go with a fuel injection. No, one thing I was going to say, I just learned that there's such a thing as micro skirt, by the way, which I think is great.
Oh, hey,
which is what they call you, right? I think
that is. Oh. Yeah. That's why I only have one kid.
No, but real quick. So
really concentrated.
Question, yeah. It's very, very, it's exactly. Yeah.
You have to chew, but you know, anyways.
Oh my gosh. It's chunky is what you're saying. But anyways,
curdled.
So here's the thing, that going back to this though, it's kind of a weird sort of catch-22 situation, because if I had the money that I have now, going back to my 16-year-old self, at the time, I would get a BMW 2002 Turbo because I was obsessed with them.
Yes.
But now I have no interest in a BMW 2002 Turbo. Yep. So it's like,
because we're old ass men.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, like, I think it's just, I just understanding what it is and like what I could build instead of that and all that. And like, it's just, I still think it's an awesome package and historically very interesting.
Yeah.
It's just not a car that I would necessarily want to own.
Yeah. I was going to say before we jump into the quiz, that was going to be the one thing. Like if I was 16-year-old me with 2024 money, it'd be muscle car. It would be I had my 65 Barracuda, the second gen Barracuda, that 67 to 69 with a 340 Formula S. It'd be muscle car stuff. And I too would like to go back to that one day. That's pretty much it.
Speaking of 2024 money, to take it back to Art, what he currently has, If we weren't in the, me and my wife right now, we own separate houses. We're about to sell and consolidate into one nicer house. If we weren't in that situation right now, my wife was like, can you please give him an honest offer on that R33? Cause she wants that car so no bad, way. Dude. And yeah, no shit. And I would love to house that, but we are literally months away from, you know, consolidating and buying a big house. So we're like freezing everything. So yeah, I just want to put that out there. If we went back to 2023 money, we'd be
2023 serious. Money. That's funny, man. Well, I appreciate it. Ironically, you know, I bought a place, you know, we moved to Santa Barbara and, you know, it would be very helpful if I sold my Skyline, because I have a very nice big house in Santa Barbara now. and it's just one of these situations where financially it makes sense to move some money around, and I'm getting set. I'm basically sort of preparing for a refi. And so, you know, without getting too into the weeds with finances, if you have a lot of cash in your portfolio, it really helps bring down that interest rate. So that's one of the reasons that I'm doing it. And so it's just funny because, you know, especially from our listener base, like, you know, on the Drive Awesome side, like people are like, how could you sell your dream car?
How dare you? I'm personally offended.
Get it. Yeah.
And you let me down. And it's like, hey, man, I have other stuff in life going on I know that this is what you know about me. There's this outlet that I'm like the car person in your life. But like, I also, you know, I have a family. I love to travel. I like food.
You
I
eat
like
and you breathe and you occasionally sleep.
I have to pay taxes and all that kind of stuff. But no, thanks, man. I mean, yeah, it's still out. It's still for sale. You know, I have it consigned with the guys at Top Rank. And it's just, cool. I don't know. I mean, there is a finite amount of time that they're going to have it for that we're going to try out. And then we'll see. Maybe it'll end up on some auction platform.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
I'm not allowed to name it because they haven't sponsored this podcast just yet. But no, I can't.
She did say to lowball you once we finish the podcast. Dude,
yeah, so listen to you little shit. You're gonna run this thing with a $28,000 reserve. Yeah. No,
40K.
No, it's I don't know. It's fun. Those cars are cool. And Chadwick, you should throw caution to them. Okay. Anyways. Why don't we do something that we love to do on this podcast? And Art, I know you've participated in this once when we were podcast. Right. I believe you and the crew over there, the DWA consortium, sniffed out the Acura Vigor, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. That's right. He's been deflowered. All right.
So why don't we do this? Chadwick, why don't you tell the people what we're doing today and tell refresh Art on the rules and regulations of this while I dig myself up and ourselves up an ad.
Yeah. So what Frank is about to unleash upon us, our listeners know very well, is our automotive print ad quiz game show where he reads through a periodical, pulls a car ad. It's going to be 80s, 90s, up to the mid 2000s in nature. He's going to read through it. He's going to redact anything that gives it away, make, model, anything obvious, any like special terms. I sometimes still say it because I don't give a fuck, but we're going to get three guesses. Well, in this case, Art's going to get three guesses to figure out what the hell Frank's yammering on about. Every time he fails, he can ask for a hint. I will be a lifeline in this one. I have no idea what Frank is going to unleash upon us. So, Art, if you need it, man, let me know. We do some pretty shitty cars, so that's kind of my subject matter expert area. But you can call me in, phone a friend. But you do have the three guesses in only 10 minutes, and that saves us from going for like 30 minutes. So
I like Frank, it. So are we going to do a Mitsubishi Cordia? Is that what we're going to do? Is it that?
It might be. It might be a Prius or something like that. Okay, so here we go. This is a one pager. It's an interesting layout. The left, like 2/3 of it, is a portrait style image of the vehicle, and then just above it, and then the right hand is text, but then just above the image on that left 2/3 it says introducing the blank. The competitive edge is now a curve. And I'm going to read it. It's a little blurry, so if I stumble here, just bear with me. But there is a hint of history in these graceful, flowing lines. History in the making. As the curve makes a comeback, and the competitive edge takes a classic turn. Inside, softly gathered leather and hand-worked walnut. A standard CD player, dual airbags, and an air conditioning system that's ozone safe. Handling the road's curves, no surprise, you discover a driver's car. With a 3.0-liter, 210-horsepower V6 engine, electronically controlled 4-speed automatic overdrive transmission, and anti-lock brakes. For those who prefer tighter handling and a firmer ride, there's the Blank Touring Package. With advanced four-wheel steering, performance alloy wheels and tires, and a rear deck lid spoiler. All of this and many exclusive Blank ownership privileges, including 24-hour roadside assistance program. The Blank Personal Luxury Sedan. Finally, someone understands what you've always wanted in a luxury car. Everything.
Interesting. So the first hint is R134, right? Ozone safe. It's not an R12 car.
That might help you nail that. That was not a hint.
And I don't remember when the hell that was, right? It was some point in the 90s. Do you know Chadwick Lifeline?
I don't know if you want to use me.
I don't think you want to burn your lifeline for that. I think the one phone a friend.
I think you're spitting facts. I'll say that.
Yeah, spitting facts.
Am I for real? For real?
For reals.
Trio TV.
Four wheel steering is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
3-liter, 210 horsepower V6.
That's important.
Yeah. Yeah, because my mind
electronically controlled 4-speed auto.
Yeah, initially my mind went to a four-door sports car, but this is later, I feel, because I was thinking Maxima, but I don't recall those having four-wheel steer. And I don't remember the displacement, but I do know it was a V6 and it was right around that amount of horsepower. Mm-hmm. Deck lid spoiler.
Correct. Yes. With those who prefer the tighter handling and firmer ride, the said touring package, you get the deck lid spoiler, four-wheel steering, performance alloys, and tires. And a firmer ride.
Mm. How are you feeling, Chadwick? Do you think you have this nailed? I'm just yay or nay.
I think I'm pretty close. I think I'm real damn close.
Personal luxury sedan. Finally, someone understands what you've always wanted in a luxury car. Everything.
Shit, who was doing four-wheel steer? So it was Mitsubishi and Nissan. Way later, you know, you had a lot of different people doing it, but I'm just trying to think early on. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. Does a Mitsubishi Diamante have four-wheel steer?
This is me being stoic.
You're doing a great job. Chadwick's like, no, you're going further away. You're going back.
Insane, man. Big fan of the Diamante on the pod.
I fucking love the first gen Diamante.
Sorry, I'm scanning. I'm going sedans, personal luxury. Mm-hmm.
Oh, we've lost your audio there, Art. We can't hear you. Hey. Yeah. Chadwick, can I hear you?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, good.
I think it's
nada. Nope. Did your earbuds go to sleep?
His non-Apple AirPods have failed.
Yeah. Beep. It's okay. We have the technology.
I think I was right.
Yep.
With lifelines, what are we allowed to ask?
Oh, we're back. And we're back. Okay, let me try and clear us up on here. So we'll cut that. Anyways, you were saying?
It has to be a specific question. How do lifelines work? I haven't been on here before. So.
Have you considered Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
I am familiar with said show.
Yeah. So you'd be like, Chadwick, what is your guess on this car? But I would save that till maybe the end because you've got or at least a second guess. You've got three guesses to figure this out.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a solid 92 to 94% on this one.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's also the year.
I was going to say that, motherfucker.
What did you say?
I had the year. I had the year.
I said, too. Is that also the year range?
He confirmed the year.
92 to 94.
Damn, dude.
I'm the best thing to do, Art, is like my humble advice is to take a stab and then like ask Frank for some clarification and guide us in.
Gotcha. Yeah. Cause that, yeah, taking a stab will reduce some of the options, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I'm just thinking, I'm stuck on this rear wheel steer and I'm like, fuck, what the hell had this like back then? I mean, a Mitsubishi 3000 GT is not a sedan. So that doesn't work. So what sedan? And then that year range.
I will tell you this. It is not sedan the way that the B13 Sentra SER qualified sedan. This has four doors.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Hold on. All right. How many minutes do I have?
we'll redact one out for audio situation. So let's. You got like five.
Five? All right.
You got three guesses to play with. I take a shoddy shot.
Shoot from the hip.
All right, let's go Mitsubishi Diamante for now.
This is not the Mitsubishi Diamante. I will tell you, and this is not going to be a particularly big hint, but you have you have the nation of origin correct.
Okay.
This is a this is a product from a Japanese manufacturer. And there's a bunch of manufacturers you didn't mention while talking about this earlier. This is one that you have mentioned while discussing this.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, because my mind was starting to go to infinity now, but it said... Wait, so I did mention the manufacturer. Confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I'm going to read the first little snippet paragraph again, because I do think that it actually, if you like through the mind's eye, you might be able to, it's a bit of a hint here. There's a hint of history in these graceful flowing lines, history in the making, as the curve makes a comeback and the competitive edge takes a classic turn.
Is curve all caps in this one, Frank? Because it should be. No. It should be.
Okay, interesting. So now I'm thinking Infiniti J30, and I'll use that as my answer, but I don't think they had a rear wheel steer on those. But that's a very curvaceous car with that slope back.
Before you confirm that, Frank, that's my guess as well.
That's what
J30. You're hunting. All right, you got a year? What year specifically?
Oh shit, you guys got 2 years.
Bonus points.
Ballpark. I mean, there was one generation of that car effectively,
Well, wasn't there a 93 song about it or something? So I'll go with 93.
Are you going like 93 till infinity? Is that where you're going?
Till infinity, yeah.
The Mighty Souls of Mischief? Oh, boy.
yes, that's what I was thinking.
Okay. The J30 personal luxury sedan. Finally, someone understands what you always wanted in a luxury car. It is the Infiniti J30. And if you got the J30T, but only for the first few years.
Yep.
That came with four-wheel steering. They later eliminated the four-wheel steering component of it because it was the 90s and Nissan was hurting for cash, and so they eliminated that component of it. But the first, I think like 92, 93, 94, I think?
Yep.
On the J30, the first few years, the J30T came with four-wheel steering.
The T on Infiniti products is like very serious because it's touring, but like a lot of cars got a limited slip with that package. It wasn't just a trim.
Like the G20.
It was like legit, yeah.
Oh, I'm right. Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to see if I can share this here.
That's so funny. So, thanks for the. I think the curve piece really helped.
Yeah, so much it was. It's
too much.
My last my last hint was going to be Infiniti just recently blatantly ripped this off for a
You can't even tell it's that curvy
EV sedan. Yeah, the image actually just undersells like the curvature.
They didn't want to show that it looks like a droopy ass like a wiener mobile,
like a freaking jelly bean.
yeah,
so bad.
Yeah, I mean they're kind of cool though, and
they are kind of cool
too, right? It's a trip. I actually was thinking about them recently because. What is that new it's a Hyundai.
That's what I was saying. The Hyundai, did I say Infiniti earlier? I meant the new Hyundai was it Ioniq 6? I was
Ioniq 6.
Ioniq 6.
Yeah.
It's like a blatant ripoff of that.
For
or
sure.
Not.
I mean,
whatever.
Yeah.
But it feels like it.
I see the
Ford Contour too. did that for a little bit, that style.
Kind of.
Yeah. Where the ass kind of melted.
Really? As much as like a
not as nearly much. As much, but yeah. I would do inappropriate things for a contour SVT, but that's
interesting. They're different. Out there. I mean, but like the B13, I mean, you know, find one intact and you know, all of that, you know, find
also B13 is a better car. Let's be real.
100%. Oh, yeah. But doesn't the Contour also have the really cool intake manifold, like the Yamaha style?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, the Gaggle of Snakes style.
Neurotech.
Well, all right. Well, I didn't do as bad as I thought. I was like, you know, how many of your guests nail it on the first try?
The first try? Oh, boy. I don't know. We're not guest heavy here. And I honestly don't know if we keep like, what do you call it? The company that does all the stats?
I do keep track of how many guesses it takes.
But for only our guests. Yeah, I don't know if we've got like saber.
I could parse the data. Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, but yeah, well done, that. Well done, Art. And so, how we normally close this thing out is: have you ever done PCP?
No, I have not.
Wow. Well, we do PCP weekly here, and when we say PCP, it's Project Car Progress. So we discuss the progress that we make on our various project cars. Mine is usually almost none, and Chadwick's is usually a lot, but still not enough. Let's lead off with our guest, Artemis Prime. What are you wrenching on or subletting out to be wrenched upon? What are your project cars? What kind of progress have you made lately?
Yeah, so I'll throw this one in here because it wasn't announced on this show, and you guys you wouldn't have known otherwise. But my personal daily driver is an E53 X5 4.6 IS.
Killer.
And it's an Estoril blue with a Alcantara sports heat interior, which apparently they made 100 of with that combination.
Damn, that's a Corvette number.
Exactly. It does have all the ashtrays. No,
polished wheels.
And it's a, you know, it's a solid daily, you know, outside of the fact that, you know, they're complex.
9 miles a gallon. Yeah.
Yep. And it's got very terrible fuel economy. A few weeks ago, I was driving it back home from some car family stuff. And as I was leaving the freeway, I got a flash of because, you know, my OBC works beautifully. Everything works on the car.
All actually. The pixels and everything?
Everything. Wow. All my pixels, my SLS works, which is the self-leveling rear suspension.
Unbelievable.
Works. All the Rindle regulators work.
Mount up.
And front and rear heated seats work. And also my parking distance sensors.
Or whatever. Wow. PDCC?
They all work. I get a little flash on the dash, check coolant level. I'm like, what the hell? And so I'm literally leaving the freeway as this is coming on to a stop sign. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I get steam coming out from under the hood. I'm like, holy shit.
Ruh-roh.
If anyone's that's familiar with these cars, these have the famous valley pan gasket failure, which is basically... You know, it's something like a 20-hour job to do. It's like this super gnarly gasket that sits underneath the intake manifold between the valley of cylinders, between the heads rather, and coolant gets everywhere and it's a disaster. So I thought, easily, that's it. Here we go, big bill. And the first thing that I've done, you know, owning a lot of cars, and as you guys know, is, you know, when your car starts to overheat, at this point, the temperature gauge hadn't really moved, but I turned on my heater full.
Crank it, baby.
Yep.
And it made it way worse. Like, I was getting like a shit ton of steam coming out from the engine bay.
Heater hose?
Almost there. And so I found a spot to park the car. I knew I wasn't going to be able to get to it right away. I had stuff to do. And I'm like, all right, I need to find a spot to leave it overnight. So I had it towed to a shop here in town. And I get a call right away. They're like, yeah, it was the heater hose that goes, you know, the valve. By the firewall there, and so that I was basically just shooting all the coolant out.
do those have a valve on the engine bay side of the firewall? And so when you hit the valve, if you turn it on, you hit the valve, and it's
like a diverter valve, right?
Right, right, correctly. Right.
Yeah.
Is it like a straight up cable, or it's probably BMW? It's probably like 11.
I know it's on the engine side because there was
vacuum actuators.
It was a relatively, you know, easy fix. It was $1,000 repair, but you know, it was like at least the part was readily available, and they didn't have to disassemble my engine. So And I had, you know, while it was, I did a, some while you're in there, you know, I get fluids, I had new brake fluid flush and stuff like that. But so it's got a new heater hose.
Nice.
It went from a down date to an update, but that's that. And then, yeah, that's just my daily right now. And I have the E30, which is currently under the knife and trying to get it on the next Driving Well Awesome rally. So the guys over at Eli,
what a hustle.
They're hustling. Yeah. So we're about three-ish weeks away and they're all in right now. Actually, I guess it's a month away now that I'm looking at it. Yeah, it's about a month away.
Yeah.
And so
like an hour short of a month.
So here's just to give you guys a sense of where things are. So the K24 is in the engine. It's bolted up.
The engine's in the engine. Is it grounded to the ground?
It's literally like, yeah. I heard you like engines, so I put it in. The K24.
Thanks, X to the Z. Yes.
Yeah, it's in the engine bay, bolted up to the transmission. And nice. One of the things I did is I changed the steering rack to a Z3 steering rack, the 1.9.
Oh, killer.
Okay.
Significantly quicker ratio.
It'll tell you.
So that's in there, but it doesn't have an intake manifold on it. They just put fresh new cams in it that haven't been broken in. It doesn't have I have all the parts there, but none of the stuff was on it as of last Tuesday, which is a few days ago. No intake manifold, no intake, no exhaust system. The exhaust manifold's off. The exhaust doesn't exist, period, by the way. Like it's like fabricated. Yeah. And the suspension is like still about TBD. And what else is missing? I don't know. Like the whole harness needs to be redone. So quite a bit of stuff.
We'll see.
But
you know, got a backup plan?
Backup plan is if my Skyline doesn't sell, tier one backup is I'll drive my Skyline again. I've taken it on several rallies. And then the other option is Turo. So I'm just going to.
How about this? If I haven't sold my little green 924 by then.
Don't do it, Art.
It could be your backup. It could be your backup. It's a trusty steed. It would work.
Yeah.
Which part was the more untrue part? The trusty or the steed reference?
Both. Well, steed is in Stuttgart. It's got.
Yeah, it's on there. It's on there. We got a steed. And it's
stretching it. Stretching it.
Got it on the shield. Yeah. On the crest. But yeah, that's basically it for now. You know, obviously, and as I mentioned, my Skyline's for sale and I don't intend on doing anything to it, but if for whatever reason I decide to keep it, you know, I did have a couple small items that I wanted to change and do stuff with. So one of them being that it's got a very modern looking stereo deck in there that I don't like, and I wanted to find something that's like fitting of the era and then
do 90s like mini disc.
Yeah, like a Bluetooth retrofit specifically, because you know I drove the car enough that I wanted that in the car. And then the other one is a little bit bigger, but it sits on a Nismo S-Tune suspension, which is you know, springs and shocks, but the dampers are adjustable, but but it's just regular static springs. So I really wanted to lower the front a little bit. Like currently it's very functional. Like it's definitely lower than stock by like about an inch and a half all around. But, you know, naturally with most cars, you know, the front wheel arch is way higher than the rear one. And so it looks like the nose is up, and like just dropping the front end like an inch and a half would make it look so much better. And yes, it does have a big ass front lip that is going to be much closer to the ground, but you know, I'll deal with that.
Rally problems.
But yeah, so that's one thing. So I was looking at like coilover suspension and like, there's some options out there, and like Olin's aren't super expensive for that car. Cool. I was looking at going that route, but potential PCP, but not.
There you go. Potential PCP is still PCP in our books.
PCP. Yeah,
that's right. So I'll go next because I want to double back on the preparing for a bit of a rally scenario. I've thrown my name into the hat and I have signed up for the next DWA Classic OG, whatever we're calling it, rally. And I signed up for a car that I've only driven about 9 miles, even though I bought it over the summer. And I'm also about to go push it off to a body shop for a full repaint, which I probably shouldn't do before the rally. I should probably make sure it's mechanically tight first, but I'm not doing that. So my poorly conceived summer purchase of the 1984 Celica Supra that I bought. It's a 97,000 mile lifetime California car, 5-speed manual, 2-tone medium maroon over an even darker maroon over maroon cloth interior. It sat for a long time before the guy I bought it from put a new fuel tank in it and got it up and running. He put a dozen miles on it. His kid didn't want it, so I bought it from him. I put less than a dozen miles on it, and it sat since. I'm getting a $3,500 full repaint on it because it sat in the sun for a very, very long time. Yeah. And all the body's laser straight. It's rust-free, but all the paint got super, super cooked. And like I found it was a guy who has like it's not a complete fly-by-night body shop, but it's like a slightly fly-by-night body shop.
Or is that kind of a form?
And so they used to do a bunch of body work for like the used department of the local Walnut Creek Mercedes-Benz dealership. But then they moved to the South Bay and they're like trying to like revamp their business. And I know somebody who knows them. Long story short is they're going to do a repaint on it for $3,500.
Dude, awesome.
We will see what the quality is, but considering I bought the car for $6,000,
yeah.
You know, if it turns out to be like a B- paint job, I'm totally okay with that. Like I'm if it's a C- paint job, I think I'm actually at the price point, I think I'm actually still okay with it. Cuz there's no rust to cut out. There's like not that much prep. It's just cooked. Like there's no dings. There's like one crease in a door that's just like a deep scratch. It's going to be a skim coat. It's going to be a prep skim coat filler and go. So we'll see. They're picking it up on this upcoming Tuesday to do the paint work. I got a new big Supra billboard script for the back of the rear hatch. I got a replacement one of those. So that'll be fresh on top of the paint. I asked like, hey, I have to have it done by the 30th was the date I told them, because I'm taking on this grandiose road rally. It's very prestigious and da 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 da. And I asked her like, well, we'll have it done in 3 weeks, which is, it's going to be a photo finish. And once I get it back, I still need to, like, I put new tires on it. But other than that, I've done nothing. And so I should probably do fluids. I should probably bring some extra bits and pieces to go with it. The clutch is like, got a couple thousand miles on it. It was done at the Toyota dealership in a couple thousand miles ago, which was 1999.
Wow.
So we're going to see. I'm going to throw caution into the wind. I don't have a co-pilot yet unless Chadwick hops in last second. But we'll see. So that's getting painted. I'm in the process of getting that ready, and that's the progress that I've made is we'll just see what happens.
That's super rad, dude. I love those cars. I'm a huge fan.
Me too. I've had several of them over the years and
so cool. And I think
Bark 2, baby.
About like an underappreciated car. And I think those, I mean, they're finally starting to pick up for nice examples. There is one thing that I would do, and this is like a Singer-esque thing, is I hate how gigantic the rear bumper is. Like if I would, I would take it to like a great fabricator and just cut it in half, like just like depth wise, if I can just reduce the depth by half, I would be stoked.
I bet it would look weird as shit though. I bet if you saw it, you'd be like, it would like you would look at it and be like, boy, that car looks good, but it feels wrong. It'd be like Uncanny Valley. Like it would look like a robot trying to pick you up.
Corolla. That's what I equated to the year. Think of like a JDM rear bumper on an 86 Corolla and look at a US spec rear bumper. Like,
fair.
Yeah.
You know what does that same thing? And you would never know because nobody pays attention. Gallant VR4. You look at a JDM Gallant of that same era,
like half.
And
half
it's not quite half, but it's a significant difference. Yeah. And you're like, oh. Or same with like my 924. You look at a Eurospec 924, you see a USDM one, and you don't think of the bumpers being huge until you see a Eurospec one. And then it's like, oh, that's what that car is supposed to look like. So maybe you might be onto something, sir. Mm-hmm. Chadwick, what have you been wrenching on?
Yeah, I mean, something always. Speaking of potential rally cars, I've got the NX2000 back there. I've done all the mechanicals, suspension completely overhauled. I got coilover sway bars, adjustable end links, all the usual suspects. All the bushings have been redone by yours
Fresh
truly.
Wheels.
I'm going to keep power level stock. SR20 likes to rev, good little motor, good 5-speed limited slip already on the car. Just doing cosmetic stuff, you know, little shit in my garage, fixed up the wheels. some other stuff, but this thing's ready to rock and roll. It handles like a damn dream. I got it corner balanced. It's ready to dance around, and it's kind of cool. T-top car, so it's kind of fun. Pull the T-tops off. I think that'd be a fun little rally beater.
I mean, it's really the better B13 SCR, right?
Yeah, it is.
Totally. No, yeah, they're super cool. I'm a big fan of those, and yours is a really black color too. I really like that car.
Yeah, they're super rare. I don't even know what the number. I think they only made, it's a 93, so it's last year. They only made a few hundred of them, and like in that color, I think it was like 40 exist. So yeah,
Skyline GTR, if you're interested, you know, maybe we can work out a deal.
Ooh, straight swap.
I mean, I already got the better Nissan. I don't know if I want to downmarket myself like that, but combo
power.
It's super cool. I got super sticky tires on it. It's going to be pretty fucking fun. So I just got to tighten it up, you know, get it ready.
What are you talking about? What tires?
I'm just running I always run Falcon Azeni 615 Ks, 200 treadwear. For these lightweight cars, I run those on Miatas, my Neon ACR. It's just, I find it for these lightweight cars, especially these front wheel drive ones, just plenty of tire.
Yeah, that's a good tire. That's a good one.
Hell yeah, brother.
The K, the 615 K is still that, the original 615 design, which has been around forever.
Just solid. Yeah.
It's a good tire. I haven't tried the 660 yet. I really want to check it out.
Heard good things. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a huge tire nerd. That's like one of my favorite automotive topics. I've run a Zenny since they came out. I've had six, what was it? The 215s, the RT215s, right? The ones that had like the wavy, like
pattern. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
I have, speaking of a Corrado SLC, I had those on my Corrado SLC. And I have pictures of that. I was pulling them up recently for something, and I did some really early, I had, a Rebel XT.
Ooh.
XT, right?
XT would have been, I think, 8.1 megapixel. The XCI was like a 10.2.
Yeah, I can't
We're going camera nerd. Go camera nerd. Been
like circa 2009, 2008?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Probably, you know what? That might be an XTI.
Bought it then and then kept it for a bit. And then I had a D20. But I can't remember. Anyway, so, or 20D was it?
Yeah, 20D.
Yeah,
B20s, Nikon.
Experimenting with
also dice
light painting, and so I have a picture.
Ooh, yes.
of me like I did a super long exposure light painting in my friend's driveway, and it was like when I first got the car, and it was pretty slammed on coilovers, and it was on shoot. I can't remember what the name of these wheels were, but it was an OEM Volkswagen wheel, and I put RT215s on it. But I'll have to show you guys pictures of that. It's pretty funny because I
oh yeah.
Me thinking it was like the coolest shit ever, and it was like pretty mediocre stuff, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I gotta
think Flickr; those things still exist.
Oh, yes, yes. P-Base, all those old like photo sharing.
Oh, dude, I actually, you know, I lost all my photo bucket shit, but like, I can still search for certain things and pull up threads on old forums where I
VW Vortex.
Yeah, exactly. Where I posted, or Honda Tech. Where I posted pictures like that were hosted on PhotoBucket, and there's a way to extract the file without the watermark. I figured it out.
Oh, look at this guy!
So I can pull up old. I have like pictures of my old Civics and shit that like, I had thought were gone forever that I discovered.
Yeah.
Recently. Nice. But anyways, photo nerds.
600x400 resolution.
we'll tell you what. We're gonna close it out here. But I think at some point down the line in the future, we'll have to have like. Deep tire nerd discussion episode where we talk about like how the Yokohama went from like they went from the ES100 to the Yokohama S drives and all the various nuance and then maybe we'll get sponsored by Nexen Tires because I keep joking about how we're going to get sponsored by a mid-tier tire brand. When that happens, when we do that, we'll have to have Artemis himself here on the pod. Mm.
Game. I'm game. Yes. And I have a line on Mucho Macho if you're interested.
Ooh, are they Cool Cat rated?
They're Cool Cat rated.
Oh, and shit.
Actually reached out. They DM'd us on the our pod, and they offered us sponsorship. Like, just it was a product sponsorship, and we just kind of laughed and didn't respond.
But, man, afford that shit.
We'd be all over that shit.
Yeah. Cool Cat approved.
That's Cool Cat approved. Okay, well,
Ling Longs, but
well, how about this? Art, you are definitely Cool Cat approved here, as far as I'm concerned. those listening along at home, perhaps watching on the YouTubes, if they want to digitally stalk you and what you do there, Mr. Cervantes, where can the good people track that down? They probably already know, but just in case they don't.
Yeah, so Radwood Official is the work stuff. Driving While Awesome is our pod and our rallies and our community building sort of things. And then Art Sees, S-E-E-S, is my
he does.
Account. So it's some car stuff, mostly family stuff. So I usually just tell people to go to Radwood.
There you go. Quit stalking me. Quit staring at my family.
Yeah, my dog.
Very cool. And your dog, mostly the dog. Well, thank you. Thank you for hanging out with us.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
Yeah.
For those,
you guys have an audience in Austin or in Texas?
We get a couple. Yeah. My friend, your friend, our very close mutual friend who we need to have on the pod, Mr. John Greco frequents.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. The nicest Texas. Man in America.
Yeah.
Hi, John. I actually looked this up the other day. I want to say, God, what country? It wasn't Azerbaijan, but we're like number six in automotive podcasts in a country that starts with A that most people don't think about it. Maybe it's Armenia. We'll say it's Armenia.
All right.
Big shout out to Armenia. And then if you're not always already following along with us, dear listener, then you should do that. We are another Pointless Automotive Podcast. We have a nearly abandoned Instagram page, which is at APA Podcast. Same if you want to watch the video component. Hi, I'm waving at you right now. That's also on YouTube. That's going to be APA Podcast on there. I'm Frank. You don't need to follow me. Chadwick, do you want people to stalk you digitally?
No, only sexually, please.
Perfect. Sexually. Okay. Well, exactly. On that lovely and mildly disturbing note, thank you, friends.
As always, guys, take care.
Until next time.
Peace.